This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving, Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of The Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Em. You know, we said we were going to start these differently. I think we actually got suggestions for how to start these. And we have to look at them, because I didn't even get to look at them.
I need them.
I forgot you're not on social media, so you don't
know
that.
I'm off the gram. Do you think people are annoyed about me talking about being off the gram yet? I'm like, at this point, I'm like holier than thou. I'm like, well, I'm not on.
I don't know if you know, but I'm not on Instagram.
Except, oh my gosh, I'm actually not on social media. Gross. As if I wasn't fucking addicted 5 months ago. But the way I act is like really like.
But also, I have to say, you are real deep into Reddit.
Okay. Yeah. No. Oh yeah. No. That's. It's so bad.
You're deep. You know, like, I really respect you getting off Instagram, but I do have to say, I think you maybe replaced it for Reddit.
Okay, but didn't I send you good Reddit stuff this week?
Yeah, you did. You sent me the best Reddit stuff.
There's hilarious things, but I was also saying, okay, so Jen went to Taylor Swift on Friday.
Life-changing.
We should also say she was gifted a ticket, because I think people need to know that those tickets are the most astronomically priced things I could ever imagine. Who can afford that?
I have such a good friend who was like, we're just doing this. So the night before, she bought us tickets, and I told her I would take care of her the whole night. But I'll tell you, it was life-changing. So I call Emily Thursday night, because we were supposed to record this on Friday. And I called her and I was like, I am so sorry. I have to change this recording date. And she, of course, was so understanding. So.
Well, that's, it was funny, because you're like, Laura called me. She, is that her name? Right?
Yeah. Nicole. That's cool. Yeah.
Because I was thinking about Laura, our therapist.
Yeah.
Two of our therapists, Laura and Lauren, who's both been on the show before, are fucking obsessed with Taylor Swift. That's what I was thinking. So you're like, she bought us tickets to Taylor Swift. And then you like stopped talking. I was like, yeah. And you're like, so I can't record. I was like, okay. I get the day off. No problem, baby.
We're in. This is a very last minute recording.
I totally am. It's really funny, because this goes back into the Reddit thread, which is that Phoebe Bridgers, who's one of my favorite singers, opened up for Taylor Swift, and I would have paid $1 trillion to see her. Like, I didn't know that was included, but then I like was like, oh, I got to show you this Reddit video about Pharrell when Phoebe was a college. Like, you can find amazing shit on Reddit. That is all I'm saying.
And I think that Emily is slowly trying to convert me to Reddit, and everyone listening, because I don't know if you know, she's off the gram.
I don't know if you've heard.
Emily's off the gram.
And I think she's mentioned it. And I think I'm so much better than everyone who's still on, okay?
You know, just the self-awareness, though, is... Also, are you wearing a Jowfit today?
Oh, well, no, it's black underneath, but you know I love my Jowfits.
Yeah.
I am wearing a jean jacket. This is why people should watch us on YouTube, but you know.
Yeah. Teach his own.
Okay. You know, it's funny. I'm going to wrap it. I got a really good pull it back
good,
in.
Thank God. Thank God. I had nothing.
I wonder if Nicole was parentified at all, because she was so quick about, I'm going to take care of all this.
Whoa.
Sorry, she didn't know she was signing up to be talked about this episode.
No, she didn't, but she's the best.
Well, hopefully she doesn't listen either, or you might want to warn her. But today's episode is about parentification, and we're going to talk to you a little bit about what that is, how it can affect you, some different ways that it could look like. We've talked about this word before, and some people really relate to it. Other people are like, what is that exactly? So let's go like a little bit diving deeper into this.
Tell us about it.
So parentification is going to occur when parents look to their children to emotional and practical support rather than providing it. So I'm going to look to my kids to do something for me as opposed to me providing it to them. This is like comes from like family therapy, different systems theory. Ivan Nagy is one of the guys, the founder of the field of family therapy, whatever. There's a bunch of shit you can look into more if you want to hear more about this. But it's a 30-minute episode, so, you know, just Okay. But there's two main types of parentification that's talked about a lot. One is instrumental parentification. And one's emotional parentification, right? So examples of like instrumental would be like, I'm the oldest sibling and I have to get my siblings ready for school. Or I am the oldest sibling and I have to be in charge of housekeeping, different things like that, paying bills, attending to other household tasks, right? So that's the instrumental parentification. I am an instrumental part of the household. Caretaking for other people. Super, super common for people, especially that grew up in addictions, their family. Also first generation folks. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. Emotional parentification is basically a child's providing the emotional support to a parent. So what that might look like is me and my partner get into a fight and then I go talk about it with my child, right? I had a rough day at work. I'm going to talk to my kid, right? So there isn't like clear boundaries about who's in charge and what's going on. So then if we like break down, I want to talk a little bit more about that instrumental to understand that like we're not saying all of this is necessarily bad. Sometimes it is necessary for a family system for people to change roles a little bit. So an example of that might be like adaptive parentification versus destructive parentification. If let's say I have a sibling, I have two siblings, I'm in a family, one of my siblings gets diagnosed with cancer. My parents have to then be with that sibling while doing treatment. I might end up taking on more of the tasks. A household task. That's adaptive. I'm going to adapt to the crisis that's happening within my family. That is not necessarily a problem or some negative thing. It's really just the way that it happened and we adapted to it. And sometimes it's still hard coming out of that, but it's not the same as my parents constantly saying, I have to do A, B, and C. We just adapted to it as a family system, if that makes sense. A really good example of this might be, let's say you're a first generation person. You're the only person who's who has like really comprehensive English skills. So let's say you end up going to, you have to go to the DMV and you help translate for your parents. So that's what I mean about like sometimes this isn't our parents are so horrible. It's just the way the family system it had to adapt. As opposed to destructive parentification, where let's say I have a parent, let's say I have a single parent who's dating, goes on these dates and comes home and tells me about it, how like bad it was or my sex life and stuff like that. That's destructive parentification in an inappropriate way. So those are some examples to sort of break down like what parentification is. And there's a lot of reasons why this ends up happening, right? So let's say that I have a parent with a medical illness or substance use disorder. That means I have to step up a little bit more. Let's say a parent who's disabled, has serious medical condition, any of these things. Let's say I have a parent who doesn't have sufficient emotional support from other adults. If a parent is really isolated. And this could happen if you're in a first generation family where your parents came here and did then not have community here. Let's say I have a parent who experienced neglect or abuse as a child and doesn't know how to parent or what that family system should look like. And there's lots of different things. Let's say a family ends up having some type of crisis, like financial crisis, and all of a sudden I know all about my family's finances. Children actually aren't supposed to know all about your finances. It's really good to teach children about finances. It's good that they should be informed about finances, but they should not be taking on the full stress around finances, if that makes sense. So here's the dangers of it. Like, what can really happen? Parentified children can have anxiety. They can have depression. They can have suicidal thoughts. They can have compulsive overworking situation. We don't know anything about that, Jen. They can have feelings of guilt. Yes, any of those. Socialization, feelings of guilt and shame, struggling to fit in with their peers in some ways because they've been parentified. They feel a little bit older. And all of that can also result in physical symptoms, right? Such as headaches, stomach aches, different things like that. Long-term effects of parentification, difficulty trusting other people.
Drum roll.
Difficulty trusting other people. I know everyone listening is like, what is the long-term effects?
No.
This is going to be what tells me. Inability to trust other people, higher chance of chronic physical illness, actually. Inappropriate sense of entitlement or authority. You've just at a greater risk for all things, anxiety, depression, substance use, all that. Involvement sometimes in unhealthy relationships, like codependent relationships. Or if I grew up with a parent who was always struggling with their mental health or substance abuse, I might end up picking a partner that does that same thing, because that's how I know how to care for others. And so that is, in my very quick talking, parentification.
Well,
did I explain it?
It explained it beautifully. The thing that I love about that explanation is, you know, I think a lot of people stay away from saying, oh, well, my parents didn't take care of me, or they didn't give me what I needed, because there is this worry about villainizing your caretakers in some way. And the thing that I love about that explanation is that it really helped put things in perspective of that this just happens when a family system is struggling with certain things, right? Doesn't mean that your parents were bad. Maybe they didn't learn, you know, boundaries from their parents. And so that way of explaining it is so non-pathologizing. And so you could be parentified, and maybe you were parentified growing up because of the circumstances.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blue Land proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blue Land is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. package. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, a lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon. Or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
I was talking to my dad this weekend, and he told me when he was 10 years old, him and his friend took the bus to New York City to see the World's Fair with just the two of them. 10 years old.
And because it was normal to do
because
that, right?
It was normal. And so it's,
if my daughter tried to do that now,
right?
The World Fair is not a thing anymore.
It's not, you're right. But, you know, it just made me think about how normal certain things were at such a young age. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're in our generation and you grew up with parents who maybe did things like that or were allowed to do things like, you know, that the things that they were permitting or were so, you know, based on what they grew up with.
Yeah.
And so that was just shocking to me.
I mean, that's insane, 10 years old.
10 years old. I don't even know how to use the bus now.
Wait. I tried to teach you how to use the bus in Philly Airport, and you could not get it.
No, I've been on the bus. I have to say, I've been on the bus since, but it took me some time. I had to do some research. It's intimidating to use public transportation when you don't know how to use it.
It really can, because you're like, is this the right side? No. Especially, well, Philadelphia public transportation sucks.
Yeah, it's also it's just terrifying.
It's just terrible. There's lots of other better public transportation, not in Philadelphia, but it is insane to think about a 10-year-old doing that, but that was normalized, right? I mean, think about, you know, we live in this country right now that for some reason is repealing all the child labor laws. That's problematic. Larger conversation about that. But it was fucking normal for kids to be working at 7, 8 years night and through the night. Right? Like, it's so wild to think about. And then you're like, all right, so was that parent? I mean, it's a form of parentification. Yes, but there's also everyone else who's doing it. So is this normalized thing? So it gets into like, what is our, and this is a, you know, conversation we've had before, is like, what's our psychobabble language?
Yeah.
And what is generational divide?
Yeah. And, you know, because I've talked to we were having a whole conversation about it where I was just like, I was shocked. And he was just like, yeah, that's just like what you did. And you don't have a cell phone either, right? You're like going to New York, no cell phone, 10 years old. It is just shocking to me. So I think the generational divide is another big thing to talk about. But kind of in the larger sense, the thing that I keep mentioning is that if you are able to say from this episode, yeah, I think there were parts of my childhood that I was parentified and I am feeling the effects of it as an adult, that doesn't necessarily mean that your parents were bad parents or they were doing something wrong or that they didn't take care of you in other ways. Sometimes it's adaptive. Sometimes it's how they grew up. Sometimes it's what they learned.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to get some of these questions since it answers some of these things we're talking about, right? So somebody had said, can this happen at any age for both the parent and the child? It can happen absolutely any age, right? So like, but like there's going to be a difference about, there's going to be a large difference of your parents get divorced at 5 years old and they talk to you about it versus your parents get divorced at 25 years old and they talk to you about it. So we think it's, yes, it could happen at any age. And also part of it is like normal, right? So like, it's interesting if you see, baby boomers right now, a lot of them are experiencing what's called like the sandwich generation, where they are caring for their parents while caring for their children as well. And so caring for your parents when you're 60 years old, is that really parentification or is that role reversal? So that's what you would have to look at. But it could happen at any age, but the outcome is going to be really different when it happens in your life.
Right. Like from a developmental perspective, that if, you know, as a child, there are certain things you cannot tend to or care for your own needs.
Yes.
And so if you're looking to your parents to say, hey, I need you to take care of this because I am struggling to care for my own needs in certain ways, then you develop a way of, okay, well, now I have to care for my own needs at a time in which maybe I'm not ready to do that, as opposed to when you're older and you have already developed that ability is I'm going to take care of this, or I'm going to, right, that I have more control over my life. And so developmentally, I think it does make a huge difference.
I mean, think about it this way, right? It's very different if you have a 10-year-old who speaks a different language and helps their parents fill out all their tax forms versus I'm 30 years old, I have to help my mom download an app. Right. Those are not the same things.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Can you talk about signs that parentification is not serving you in adulthood? Obviously, we are systemic therapists. We look at relationships. So our first sign is going to be what's happening in your relationships. Do I struggle to let other people come in? Some people become very aware of parentification once they become parents and they don't let their partner be involved, right? They feel like they know how to do it best and they're the only way. And that might be because they've been doing it for decades before becoming a parent themselves. And so is it getting in the way of some of your relationships? Do you struggle at work to take feedback because you're used to being in charge? Do you feel incredibly resentful towards your parents because of things that happened, right? Like you're allowed to be angry that you had a different experience than your peers. Yeah. But if your parent, you have a caregiver who got sick with cancer at a young age, that also wasn't their fault and intentional. And so I would say, like, in what ways do you see some issues within your relationship that could maybe go back to this?
Another example might be you completely neglect your own needs and your own emotions because you grew up. Weird. Is that resonating at all?
It's coming a little bit personal now, but yeah, sure.
But you neglect those things because you were never taught to listen to yourself. Like if no one was caring for you or your own emotional world, you were never taught to attune to your own needs because others weren't attuning to those needs. You learn to attune to other people's needs around you. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing I would say is that are you completely neglecting also your relationship with yourself? Because in order to survive, you had to attune to everyone else's needs around you as opposed to getting those needs met from others.
Yeah.
So that is a question that I would ask yourself. Are you able to listen to yourself? Do you even know how you feel? Do you even know what you need? And are you able to attune to those needs?
Mm-hmm. I really love this question, so I want to dive a little deeper here. Is it possible for a child to parentify themselves? I have great parents who preserved my youth, but I took on an adult role regardless. I would often involve myself in parent matters that they tried to protect me from. Ooh, so why'd you do that as a kid? That's interesting.
Here's what I would say. Children are sponges. They soak up everything. And you know, Emily talked about adaptive parentification and how it's not an overt parentification that's mm-hmm. happening, right? That your family adapts to certain things. We don't have an answer for maybe what your family was going through, but it's possible you felt something within your family system that wasn't overt in a lot of ways. You picked up on maybe, I don't know, parent stress, with other things that they were not talking about. And because of that, you said, I'm going to do what I can to take the stress off. That's how I'm going to stay connected to my parents is I'm going to take things on myself. I'm going to handle this. And so it's a good example of adaptive parentification in the sense of like when you're a child, you are a sponge. Once again, it does not mean that your parents are bad parents or they're doing mm-hmm. anything wrong. You may have picked up on stress that wasn't told to you. And in turn, to stay connected or close to your parents, you took on certain things that maybe you felt would help take that stress off of your parents.
And when you say that, you mean like energy, like energetically, you could sometimes feel it too. Like it does not mean your parents were like fighting or making noises.
Or saying to you, you need to take this on.
Yeah, they pick absolutely. It up. Yeah. How to reserve space for me when I parent my siblings and have my own issues? So the question is, how are you reserving space for yourself, right? Like if you know that you need space, are you like actually marking that off in your schedule and routine? And I think the thing is, when you're caring for other people, it is actually difficult to have motivation to care for yourself because you're usually exhausted with the caregiving you're already doing. And so I would encourage you to make it not about like motivation, but more about like discipline around it, or ritual or routine around it. The idea of that is like, you're not going to wake up one day and be like, oh, here's this time I have to do. You're probably going to be like, oh, what's the stuff I have to do for my siblings? Or what's the laundry I have to get? Or what's the other shit I have to do? And that's really helpful for sure. But what would it also be like to mark 20 minutes each day in your schedule, or like, you know, 3 hours in one day, whatever works for your schedule. There's no right or wrong way to do it, for you to actually create that time for yourself. And then what is that time need that's not just doing laundry, doing dishes, et cetera.
Yes. And that's a perfect example of like parentification, where like it might be a necessity that you have to help take care of your siblings. But, and once again, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. It just is at times. And for you to acknowledge that, but also acknowledge that you are allowed to have your own needs and take care of those needs at the same time is really important, because you do matter, and it's important to acknowledge what you need and what you want. And if you're so used to the thing that's been adaptive for you is to focus on others, then the more challenging piece of it is going to be able to is blocking that time out for you and focusing on what you need.
Parentified sister acts like our mom when our family is together. She's judgmental and flexible, .. So let's remember empathy, right? So like, clearly your sister was parentified. She somehow got, either she got put in this role as mom, or she feels like she should take it over. Maybe your mom is no longer with us, isn't around. Why is there some reason your sister feels like she needs to take on this role? So you can do a few things. One is you can say to yourself, shit, it must kind of suck to be her. She can't relax in this situation. And you sort of have emotional boundary, like a firewall. Two, you can say to your sister, hey, you do so much for all of us all the time. And when we all get together, how can you have fun and relax? What can I do to help that?
I love that, because my question was going to be, what then do you do when your sister is inflexible or judgmental? When people are parentified, they feel like they have to take on this rigid adult role in order to be able to manage the roles that they're put in that they're not ready for. And so it might be the case that your sister, when she's around you, not because you did anything wrong, it's just the dynamic in your relationship, that she feels like, oh, I have to take this on because I've always had to take this on. This is how I've taken care of everyone. This is how I've protected the dynamic. And so my question would be, what do you typically do when your sister goes into that role? Because it's all about the systemic nature of your relationship. And if you can recognize, well, maybe I fall into a childlike role when my sister's inflexible or judgmental, I get reactive, or I, you know, am more emotional, whatever it is. I fall into this role where I ask her to take care of whatever it is. I would ask yourself, what do I do in those moments when she's in that? And is there something that I can change about the way in which I'm responding to her? Just as Emily said, is there anything that I can take off your plate? Is there any way that I can give you more space to feel like you can be a little bit freer in our dynamic? So we can't change what someone else does, we can change what we do in the systemic nature of that pattern.
Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14-karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
How to create new boundaries with parents you've had to parent in the past. And then there's another question. There's a few questions like this, right? So like the other one I'm seeing, Nikki does such a good job when she pulls questions.
I know. She puts them in like great order.
She puts them in a very good order, and she like goes through and like ones that make sense for the conversation. But quite a few people said, and then how do I handle the guilt associated with that, right? Like, how do I switch this relationship system and then also not feel bad, which like you're going to feel bad at the beginning of putting any type of a boundary down. Prepare for that. And also you can handle and live through feeling guilty. And that just takes time to go through. So the question is how to create new boundaries with parents you've had to parent in the past.
So I would first want to ask you what the fear is of changing those boundaries. Like, what's the worry of what's going to happen if you don't parent them in the same way that you've been parenting them in the past? Is it that they're going to, I don't know, self-destruct in some way? They're going to hurt themselves. They're going to, right? Which like can be a very valid fear. But I think at some point, you know, for you to ask yourself, like, what is your responsibility? How is this responsibility or this role? How has it affected you? And what's the cost of being in this role?
Oof.
And for you to acknowledge what that cost is to yourself and to be in a position where you're always putting your parent first, right? That you really have to acknowledge what the cost has been to you in order to make the change.
Yeah. Oh, and that's so rough to think about, what's the cost, right? Because for also the cost, but also what are you giving up if you stop, right? For a lot of people, that is how they've maintained relationships. That's how they get external praise from their parents. It's how they get appreciation. It's how they stay connected, is to do stuff for their parents. And so to give that up, that is a really hard thing to do.
Right. Because like, what does it mean then for your relationship with them? Like, then does it mean you also have to experience the grief that comes with the fact that you didn't have the relationship that you necessarily needed?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the only way to stay connected to a parent is to parent them, right? Or is to be their caretaker in some way.
Yeah.
And sometimes we hold on to that role to not experience the grief of not having that parent-child relationship in our lives. And so is it the fear of experiencing that grief if you were to give that role up?
I know we have a lot of questions to get through, but I'm jumping down to this one because yes. I'm really obsessed with it, which is how to regulate your own system during moments you'd usually step in and take on the role. And here is another conversation of emotional self-regulation and then talking yourself down. So let's say you're at a family event and your mom and sister start fighting. And typically, you would jump in to parent them to not fight. They act like siblings, you actually act like the mom, right? And so you see this happen and your body starts, like maybe your chest starts to get a little tighter, or your body starts to feel like I need to stand up and do something, or I have to move my arms. And so you're going to say, okay, it's happening. This is it. It's happening. It's happening. Wait, that's from a fucking movie. It's like, it's happening. Like, that's what you're saying to yourself.
No idea what movie you're talking about, but I support you.
I don't think. Why do I keep thinking it's Evan Almighty, though?
I don't know. It's possible. Doesn't that happen in that movie?
It feels like Steve Carell. Oh my God, it's The Office. It's from The Office.
Gotcha.
It's happening. It's happening. Okay, it's from The Office. All right. So you have your office moment. You're Steve motherfucking Carell. And you're like, it is happening. This is it. And you're going to do nothing. You're going to say to yourself, here it is. It's happening. I could physically sit. I just meant to move my, put my hands around my legs. I could physically put my hands down. And I'm going to sit there and talk myself down. So I'm going to let them, I'm not even going to listen to what they're doing anymore. I'm going to totally start a conversation with me. And the conversation with me is going to look something along the lines of this. Here it is. It's happening. And I'm going to do nothing. Here it is. It's happening. I'm going to do nothing. Here it is. It's happening. And I'm going to do nothing. And this could blow up. And they could freak out. And someone could leave. And I'm going to do nothing. Now, someone listening to this is thinking, but my kids are there. Don't I have to do something? Take your kids outside, go to the goddamn swing set. No, you have to do nothing. Oh, well, it's riling the dogs out. Great, put the dogs outside. Go for a walk with the dogs. You, whatever excuses you tell yourself of why you have to intervene is not helpful. Oh, well, they're going to start physically fighting. Great, call the cops. It doesn't have to be you.
And that's so important to be able to take that responsibility off of yourself. And I think a piece of that is for you to be able to say, it's not my responsibility to intervene. And it never was. And that's, that I think is going to switch a lot of the mental energy of like, oh, I always, you know, we just naturally go into these roles. And if you always felt like it is my responsibility to take care of my mom and sister fighting, like I'm the only one who will do it. When the fact of the matter is, it was never your responsibility to do that. And so take that responsibility off of yourself. The weight that that will lift off of you when you can practice that over and over and over again.
I'm glad you said the practice part, because you're not going to feel weight taken off the first time. You're going to feel like shit the first time.
No. You got to practice it. This takes a ton of practice.
22. Maybe like after the 22nd time, it's going to feel like a weight.
And here's the thing. You have to practice it in small moments too, right? Let's keep using the mom and sister example, right? So like your mom and sister typically get in a fight. Mom usually calls you to talk about your sister. And, you know, there's all these little moments that lead up to these arguments or the dynamic where you're being triangulated into that dynamic. And so a small piece of this might be when mom calls you to say, oh my God, did you see what your sister did, blah, 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 where you say, listen, I'm not talking about this. I am not getting in the middle. This is not my responsibility. It's another example. It's a small piece of the puzzle where you can detriangulate yourself and take the responsibility off you to be pulled in the middle to diffuse the anxiety in that relationship. That is not your responsibility, and it never was.
Okay, one more question for you, dear Emma Jane, because I want you to answer this one because I love it.
Okay, great.
How to handle if your in-laws do this to your spouse? Oof.
So, Emily wants me to answer this because I have personal experience with this.
No, I didn't do that. Remember last week when Dick Schwartz made you do?
It's just like vulnerability overload.
Do an activity that you really did not actually consent to.
I mean, I consented. It was just like, how do you? You can't say no to Dick Schwartz.
No. Not when you've read all the books and you've done all this stuff. You're like, I guess I'm fucking here and I'm just going to do this, right?
I'm in. Everyone enjoy.
But also when I put you on it, you do seem to do well too. So how do you handle if your in-laws do this to your spouse?
So I think a big piece of this is, once again, what is the parentification that's happening? In certain ways, and I'll give you an example. In my relationship, my husband, he has to, in a lot of ways, take care of his father at times. And so in that situation, I am as supportive as possible to my husband because I know the mental load that he has to take on. I also talk to him about boundaries for himself and within our relationship, because boundaries are so necessary at times in order to, for him to be able to take care of himself also. And so I think that that's a big piece of it, is to also remind them how important their self-care is for them to be able to give to themselves also, because you can get so stuck in that cycle of giving and giving and giving. And so I think creating a boundary around your relationship and talking about, hey, you know, it's also important that you take care of yourself, because it's going to affect you in other ways if you don't. And be a supportive partner, that just because maybe you did not have that dynamic with your parents doesn't mean that that's not a reality for your spouse. I think so often in relationships, we tend to push our own ideas about what our relationship has been with our parents onto our spouse. Like, why isn't it like this? As opposed to realistically looking at, like, this is a different situation and I'm never going to be able to fully understand what this is like for them. But what I can do is be as supportive as possible in this understanding that this is how it is. But to also at the same time talk about boundaries and talk about setting, you know, setting yourself up so that you can take care of yourself too.
Mm-hmm. Ready for Dear Imogen?
I'm ready.
Dear Imogen, thank you first for all you do on your podcast. We love it. I learn something every time I listen. I need help with a family issue. I come from a very enmeshed family. When there are big events celebrating one of us, my parents seem to start a fight or make the day ruined if something doesn't go their way. I am pregnant with the first grandchild due soon. That's a big weight. My question is, she didn't say that's a big weight. My question is, how do I not let their emotional immaturity ruin moments of this time in my life? I don't want my child to feel the discomfort, and I don't want to have stained memories of an event due to their inability to control their emotions. Thank you as always. Ooh, first of all, way to pre-plan.
Great. Love pre-planning.
That. Way to think about this now, because you're right. They're going to fucking make some shit about themselves if that's the history.
And essentially what you're saying is, I don't want my child to experience what I experienced. And good, I think that is a beautiful thing to be able to say as a parent. And mm-hmm. It's a very self-aware thing. And for you to be able to acknowledge, like, these are things that felt very damaging to me in these points of my life, I don't want my child to experience that. And so the thing that I'm going to say to this is boundaries. Strong, strong boundaries here. This is something where I'm looking back at, like, okay, so for example, if in this celebration, if like your parents got to like choose where it was or like what was happening, that maybe you create stricter boundaries around, like, this is going to be at, I don't know, a restaurant, and it's going to be for 2 hours. And if you start fighting, then we're going to leave, right? Like, that, to make it very clear that this is something that has affected you and it's important to you to protect your child and take care of your child and not have them experience this. You get to have a little bit more control over the environment and how long you stay for. So if you've usually had these things at your house and it was harder to get people to leave, then you do it in a neutral place where you can leave if it's something that's affecting you. That's where I think boundaries are so strong and so important.
And I love that. We're talking about the theme boundaries, and you're sort of talking about in some ways physical boundaries. And I think that also goes into emotional, which is, you might have to say to yourself is, these are my parents. This is the shit they do. And I can't be around it when it happens, right? So maybe in the past you tried to peacekeep. Maybe you tried to intervene. Maybe you got really reactive towards it. I would say, if there's possibility, walk away and they can do that shit on the side. Or you can set a strong boundary and say, if this continues, I'm going to have you leave. And you need to really think about, you're right, there is actually a really strong weight of bringing the first grandchild in. And you might have to say, what are the boundaries I want to set up now? Right? So, like, if I know that they sometimes take over, maybe I don't have them go visit the baby for the first week. Because guess what? You can say, we're not having any visitors, or you can fucking lie if that's what you need to do. And I know that that's not the best advice from someone, but I'm just telling you, your peace matters more, right? So maybe what you're saying is, oh man, it's a really a lot of RSV going on right now. So, like, the doctor really recommended no guests for the first week. Do what you need to do in this situation. But goes back to this thing we talked about earlier, which is the firewall, which is that, like, some people are who they are. This is the shit they're going to do. And how am I going to protect my peace and take care of myself? And that is, like, setting in a, like, emotional firewall up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, but hey, congratulations on being pregnant, bringing that first grandchild in. And it's going to be as beautiful as you want it to be. And it's going to be great. And some people are always going to make some shit about themselves.
And you get to make changes. You get to make, and you know what? Sometimes it does take having a child to be able to say, like, I'm going to set the boundaries for my child that I was never able to maybe set for myself.
And it's, I mean, it is a really powerful thing. I found myself all of a sudden I can speak up and be so much stronger and so much braver. We had a, Jen knows a little bit about it. We had this really shitty interaction that happened at the park a few weeks ago that left me really rattled. Somebody touched Millie in a way that I wasn't happy with. Everything is fine. But I would have frozen in the past when it happened to myself. It was so quick for me to intervene and react and to be right there. And so when you become a parent, it is in a very, very different way. And all of a sudden, stuff that felt impossible to say before feels a little bit easier. Mm. And I hope that that's one beautiful thing parenthood could bring her.
It's beautiful.
Yes. Hey, thanks for listening to today's episode of Shrink Chicks.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
You enjoyed this episode or you think it would be helpful for a friend, send it on over to them. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, follow on Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star. Check us out on YouTube. We are making funny faces. We look a little ridiculous. We're both in jowfits today. What else we got? Oh, if you're looking for a therapist, we have a therapy practice called the Therapy Group. We have clinicians who serve a bunch of the United States. And if we can't get you in with one of our clinicians, we will give you a wonderful referral for a down-to-earth therapist. That's it. Did I miss anything?
You did a great job.
Thank you so much. And don't forget to grow yourself. You got to know yourself. We'll see you next week.